Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, this episode is sponsored by iTalkie, and their service fits in really well with episodes of my podcast. The two things complement each other really well. You can get loads of natural input from my episodes, pick up some vocabulary, notice aspects of grammar and pronunciation, and then activate all of it in your iTalkie speaking sessions. Check out teacherluke.co.uk/talk for more information. And when you buy some talking time, iTalkie will give you a voucher for a free lesson. teacherluke.co.uk/talk, or just click an iTalkie logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, folks. How are you doing? Welcome back to part two of this double episode called Becoming a Dad with Andy and Ben. I may need to rethink that title, actually. It sounds a bit misleading. Becoming a Dad with Andy and Ben. It sounds a bit like I'm becoming a dad with Andy and Ben, as if somehow Andy and Ben are involved. I'm not sure about that idea. I mean, they definitely weren't involved, okay? Nevertheless, here is Becoming a Dad with Andy and Ben, part two, in which I'm talking to my friends, Andy and Ben, about their experiences of becoming a father for the first time. And I'm trying to learn a few things about what it will be like when I become a dad in a matter of weeks. Andy and Ben are like seasoned professionals at this now. They both have two kids. And in part one, you heard us talking about things like conception, trimesters, epidurals, and all sorts of other things. And we left it on a bit of a cliffhanger with me asking Andy and Ben about the moment their first children were born, so the moment of birth. So we get straight into it here in part two by talking about the big day, the moment when it's time to get to the hospital and then all hell breaks loose. Now, this is probably the most crucial moment of the whole process and can also be quite a dangerous day as well. So there is often drama and a lot of nerves. It's a nerve-wracking experience. And we'll be talking about it in some detail in this episode. So if childbirth is a topic that you're sensitive about, just have a think about it before embarking on this episode. I think I'm prepared for the big day. I think mentally and also in terms of our home and all that stuff. But it's going to be a big rush to deal with, and no doubt it will be quite emotional. Even going for scans is quite a big deal, so it's hard to imagine what the actual birth will be like. Anyway, let's carry on. See if you can identify the things that Andy and Ben are saying. And stick around, because in the second part of this episode, I'll go through lots of the vocab that you're hearing. And that will turn this into a great learning opportunity for you, okay? So let's now get straight back into the conversation with Andy and Ben. And here we go. Can you tell me about the moment of childbirth? How did you know that your wife was going into labour? Can you tell us?
With my partner, she basically just told me that she thought her water had broken in the morning.
She just told you?
She said, "I think my waters are broken." I was sort of on my way to work, actually, and she wasn't really sure, and she was sort of umming and ahhing a bit, but she said, "I think my waters are broken," and I said, "Okay, well, I'm going to go into work because I need to go," and I had a few things that I was sorting out. It was actually quite unfortunate because I had a two-week window to be training somebody who was going to fill in my role while I was taking my paternity leave.
You're kind of a big deal now at the London School of English.
Well, I'm like a courses manager at the school, yeah. So one of my colleagues was, I was due to be training up, so she was going to sort of cover me while I was taking my paternity leave. So basically I came into work for about an hour and said to her, this is going on now. And she basically didn't have any training. She was just thrown into the courses manager, assistant courses manager role at that time, on the back of me just saying, right, you got to do this, this and this, and then running out the door. So,
wow.
So wait a minute, your wife told you in the morning, she said, my waters have broken. So what, like, where was she? She was in bed or what?
She got up in the morning and went to the loo, and it was more liquid came out than she was anticipating.
Okay, all right.
She was a bit weird. She wasn't really convinced it had happened, but she said, oh, I think my waters are broken. And I said, okay, fine, you know, we can deal with that. But I do have to go into work for an hour just to explain the situation, which I did. And then,
And then what, you just sort of calmly went to hospital? Is that what happened?
Well, actually, the contractions were pretty slow, actually. And she actually took her ages to start contracting properly. We went to the hospital, I think, after about 36 hours of labour. It was very, very slow.
Wow.
36 hours of contractions.
Were very, very minor at the beginning. Almost like, I don't know if you've heard of something called Braxton Hicks.
Oh, yeah.
Never heard of Braxton Hicks.
Are like sort of false contractions women start to get sort of around the time you are now in your wife's pregnancy.
I did I heard about that yesterday from the French midwife, but she didn't call it Braxton Hicks. She might have called it Braxton Hicks, but I don't think so. But she was talking about false contractions yesterday, so that's what she was talking about. Okay.
Yeah, so they were sort of a bit on the par with that, really, but we knew her water had broken. But it was just very, very slow, and it gradually built up. And actually, when we arrived in the hospital, she was actually already 9 centimetres dilated.
9 centimetres.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's almost there.
So it was almost there.
10 is there.
10 is 50.
10 is the magic number.
And then we got to the hospital and everything just stopped, just weirdly. It just all slowed down and we waited there for, I don't know, 12, 14 hours. And they decided to do an induce to get that last centimetre.
Mm. So wait, sorry, during all this time, so the 36 hours pre-hospital and then the 14 hours or whatever it was of her being in labor in the hospital, was she in a lot of pain?
Not massively, actually. A little bit when she was at home, but not what I was expecting. You know, I was expecting screaming the house down, and that didn't actually materialize for me on my first kid anyway. And then we got to the hospital and things just sort of stopped, and then gradually during the day it kicked on again. But,
okay. And then they induced her, you said?
Yeah, because she wasn't going that last centimetre. It just sort of dried up, really. So they induced her and then it gradually started opening. But then basically just things went wrong somehow, and we ended up with a caesarean. So.
Oh, right, really?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That must have been pretty scary.
For me, it was very scary. For my wife, she was just out of it. She didn't have a clue what was going on. She, you know, she was drugged up to the hilt. She had the epidural. She was on some other painkillers. Mm. For me, it was, I think Andy mentioned in his one that he had suddenly a crack team of doctors come into the room. Exactly the same for me. So we were sitting there, an alarm went off, and 15 people ran into the room. One of them threw a pair of scrubs at me, which is like the medical clothes,
surgical
gown, and said, we're going to theatre. And I was just standing there and sort of, okay.
I love the theatre.
Like, oh, what are we going to see? You're Shakespeare.
Are we going to see Star Wars?
Yeah. Within 15 minutes, the baby was here. It was just that quickly.
So you're sitting there after 14 hours going, well, this is, you know, this is a bit boring, isn't it? Like, it's not the drama I expected. And then suddenly 15 doctors bowl in, one of them throws some scrubs at you. Get those on and get in there now. Get in the theatre.
And they just whisk my wife away to the theatre. So,
And then I guess, as you said, they did the caesarean. And then next thing you know, Baby.
Baby. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Really quick, really fast, and yeah.
Okay, good. So I guess it all worked out in the end.
Yeah, it was fine. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a similar experience because I think one of my big worries before our first was born was Natasha waking me up in the middle of the night saying, "It's happening," because I'm not really a man for a crisis. I wouldn't know what to do. I would be running around like a headless chicken. But fortunately for us, because of going through IVF and my wife developed gestational diabetes. So it's really common, apparently, to get diabetes while you're pregnant. It's the strangest thing. And you have to be careful with it because too much sugar going through the placenta can make the baby grow too quickly. So we had to be induced at 38 weeks, which is why the baby came earlier than the original due date. So we had it all booked in. It was brilliant. So we had to be there at lunchtime on a Saturday. So we got a cabin and it was great. And then they did a very soft induction. So inducing is when they kind of give you chemicals to try and encourage the contractions to start or to start the pregnancy. And with our first, it was a very mild drug that they used. So it happened really, really slowly. And so we started, I think it was 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. And our first was born at 9:30 the following morning. So not quite 24 hours, but I think 18 hours. Mm. But actually, it was the night that the clocks changed here. So we had an extra hour. So my wife always reminds me of that. When I say it was 17 hours, she goes, no, it was 18 hours because the clocks changed.
The clocks changed.
But yeah, it was just really, really slow. But then she was 10 centimeters dilated. It was all ready to go. But then it suddenly stopped, like with you, Ben. But with us, what had happened, though we didn't really know this at the time, was that our son had got stuck in the birth canal. So the very last part before the baby comes out is called the birth canal. And what had happened is the umbilical cord had got wrapped around his neck. And so he couldn't go any further. So that's when all the people came rushing into the room. And they had to use like the forceps and do a little bit of surgery to widen, to get the baby out. Mm. And then the scariest thing for me, and I don't want this to scare you, but I think this just happens quite a lot. But when our son came out, he was like a funny blue color and he wasn't making any noise. Mm-hmm. And my thought was, I can't believe this is happening after we waited this long to have a child that, this is happening.
Yeah.
And immediately they cut the umbilical cord and took him over to the resuscitation table. And they were like giving him like a form of CPR to get his heart going. And it happened straight away. He started going straight away. And my wife at this time was a bit out of it as well because they'd given her quite a lot of painkillers because they
That's the scary time for you as the dad because you're aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
And she isn't. Your wife isn't really. They can't see. They can't, they're not seeing the action and you are. Mm.
they're in
control of anything. Yeah. And you're just like sort of quite helpless, really.
It's weird because it was like a very calm and professional kind of atmosphere in the room, but it was like controlled panic, if you like. You could tell that they had to be quick to do it. And actually afterwards, one of the nurses said to me that, they wouldn't have wanted to leave that any longer because he was having trouble breathing. So they were doing resus on the table and they said, "Oh, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Do you want to come and see your baby?" And I was just like, "Can I?" I don't know why I said that, but they said, "Yeah, of course you can." And I had to walk from one side of the room to the other, but my legs were so shaky. I had to like walk with my hands on the walls to get around to the wall.
Yeah.
And then when I got there, first of all, I saw this massive junk because, when babies are born, their genitals are all swollen through all the hormones. So it's a boy.
Wait a minute. His genitals were like really big because they were swollen?
It's normal, Luke. Yeah.
It's normal.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
And so, first thing I saw, it was a boy, and I think I must have told my wife 3 times that it was a boy before she actually clocked what I was saying because she was in a bit of a daze. And then I remember I put my hand on him, on his chest, and he immediately kind of made a noise, and that's the first noise he made. And then that was me finished. I just burst out crying.
Yeah.
And then he weed all over the nurse. And I was like, yes, everything's fine.
That's my boy.
That's my boy.
Yeah. It's interesting you say about the crying, because for me, that I held it together. I don't know how I did, because I'm quite squeamish. Anyway. I don't know how I held it together, but I did. And then as soon as I got outside on my own and I was about to call my mum and just say that everything's all right, that's when I really broke down. And
yeah.
Oh, my God, I've just been in there. There's just babies coming. Oh, my God. It's
just insane. And the second one was the complete opposite. It just kind of the contraction started and then a couple of pushes and out he slid. It was just really, really easy. So it was the complete opposite and crying away, shouting away. So there was no drama. There was only us and the midwife in the room. There was only three people in the room. Two of them were the parents. So it was the complete opposite. So I hope that you have something closer to that and you have no dramas. But if there are dramas, don't worry. You're in safe hands.
Yeah, I think the message to take, really, Luke, is that pretty much anything can happen.
Yeah.
You're not in control of any of it, really.
No.
You just have to go with the flow and, it's all right in the end.
Yeah. So when, during the actual birth, where exactly were you standing?
I was standing next to my wife, holding her hand.
Right. Was it that cliche of her squeezing your hand really tight?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's fairly real. Did you actually choose to look during the moment of the birth?
I did actually. Yeah. I'm quite squeamish, but I just dealt with it. I don't know how I did, but it's something that you'll never ever be prepared for.
No.
It's you'll never be prepared for it. It will happen to you, and it will just you'll take it in. But I can't describe what that you're going to see.
Would you recommend that I look?
I didn't for our first, but for some reason the midwife on the second one said, "Do you want to come and have a look?" And for some reason I did. And I think Russell Brand, when he had his child, he said it's a bit like seeing your favourite pub burn down. I kind of regret it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, but you never. I mean, I just the curiosity got the better of me, and I thought, well, yeah, why not? But the thing is, I went down to have a look, expecting not really to see much, but there was like this head like this, poking out. Sorry, I just you can't see on the podcast, but I'm trying to illustrate what I could see. There was just this head poking out the top of a head. It was really, yeah. Don't do it.
Yeah. Well, my wife actually has said to me, no, you're not going to look. I'm not letting you look. So I'm not allowed to look.
Okay, well, that's good.
It's fine.
I don't think you really need to ask us anything about this. It sounds like your wife has got it all under control.
She's got everything under control, yeah. She's totally got everything sorted, yeah. All right, fine. So then after, I guess you stayed in the hospital for a bit, until the baby was ready to go, and then you came home and stuff. And so what about the first couple of weeks? What's that like?
For me, actually, I was like, this is easy. It was fine.
It is easy to start with.
Was just sleeping all the time.
Yeah.
Changed his nappy 4 or 5 times a day. Didn't really wake up. It was like, this is easy. I've nailed this parenting. There's not much to do. Maybe a feed in the night, but not very long. And that was it. I was like, God, this is actually all right. I thought this was going to be a lot harder. After about 3 or 4 weeks, he sort of woke up, and immediately it was...
it gets harder.
Very hard, yeah.
Right. So a couple of weeks of kind of dormant baby after they're sort of still a bit sleepy from the birth, and then once they kind of start to wake up, that's when it really kicks in then, is it?
I'd probably agree with that. I mean, it wasn't... I remember those first 2 weeks were a bit... There was very little sleep, but... Also, they're very low maintenance. We came home from hospital and we put our son down in his cot, and I looked at my wife and I said, "What do we do now?" And she went, "Well, why don't you just make me a cup of tea?" I was like, "All right, I'll do that then." And we didn't, there was literally nothing to do. It was the baby was asleep.
Yeah,
and it was quite.
It's actually quite a nice time if you can get. Sort of manage the people who are desperate to try and see you and the baby, people hound you because they're desperate to meet it. If you can manage that well, it's actually quite a nice time.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, Why don't we? I've got a little quiz here, which is entitled "Are You Ready to Be a Dad?" And these are all questions about what you need to know about with newborns in particular. So we are going to ask you some questions, and I'm trying. I don't think I know some of the answers to this, but we'll see what you think. Okay.
Okay.
And apparently, this will give you your baby IQ. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Well, I'm ready for the quiz. I'm not sure if I'm ready for the baby, but I'm ready for the quiz in any case. And we'll see if I'm ready for the baby. Okay.
I'll tell you what, I'll ask Ben the questions too, and you two can have a little competition. But you're going to answer first, Luke. Okay?
All right. Cool.
All right. Question one: how long should you let your newborn cry at night before picking her up? So you've got less than 1 minute, 5 to 10 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes, or until she stops. What do you think, Luke?
Well, I don't think it should be too quick because, you know, you shouldn't sort of get the kid into the habit of crying and then receiving, you know, that attention. So I think you should leave it for a while. Is it 5 to 10 minutes or is it... I don't think it's until they stop, because what happens if they never stop? You know, you've got to pick the kid up to at some point. So is it 5 to 10 minutes or what was the third option?
10 to 15.
10 to 15 minutes of crying.
No.
I don't know, man.
This question largely depends on your parenting style. That's I would true. Say actually.
It does depend on your parenting
There's
style.
There's a wrong answer here.
What I understand from the Native Americans is that what they would do with a crying child is that they'd wrap the kid up in a basket and hang the kid from a tree until it stopped crying. Now I don't know if that's really.
I'm not sure that's going to fly in Paris.
I'm not sure that would work in Paris because we don't have that many trees here. That's the only reason. But I don't know if that's really the best idea either. I don't know. I think I'm going to say 10 to 15 minutes, but that seems like quite a long time for your baby to be crying. It'd be very difficult to not pick them up after 10 minutes of crying.
Yeah, that's what you'll find, I think. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if this is going to give answers. Okay, I'll put 10 to 15. All right, next question. I'll give you the answer in a minute if I can get it. How many times a day, this is a good one, how many times a day does the average newborn need to feed? Is it 3 meals a day, every 4 hours, 8 to 15 times, or on the hour, every hour?
Oh my God, I don't really know. Newborn?
Newborn, yeah.
It can't be once an hour, every hour, can it? Because they need to sleep. So I'd say every 4 hours.
Ben?
It's a bit less than that, I'd say, but...
No, I'd say it's 8 to 15 times a day. Fairly certain of that.
So we're going to wait until the end of the quiz before we get the answer to that one, right?
We are, yeah.
But in your experience...
Every 2-3 hours is what I would say.
Every 2 or 3 hours.
Fairly certain that wasn't an option.
Yeah, it wasn't, but that would fit really with...
8 to 15 times a day. Yeah.
8 to 15 times a day, you think?
Well, the thing that I remember from when we did our classes is that a newborn baby's stomach, it has is the size of a euro or a pound coin, so it fills quickly but it empties quickly, so they do need to feed a hell of a lot.
Wow, that's small. Okay,
here we go. This is one. What sort of present would your partner turned mum appreciate most? So what sort of present would your wife appreciate the most? An outfit for the baby, a bouquet of flowers, or a voucher to pamper herself with a facial, massage or manicure, and the time off to do it? It's a stupid question.
It's obviously number three.
Basically, get a present for the baby or a present for her?
Present for her, of course.
Obviously.
Yeah, because we've already got everything we need for the baby, and, I mean, she's just gone through childbirth, so she needs to be pampered. Yeah, so definitely option three. The pampering session.
Pampering.
But actually, for my wife, because she's French... You know what the first thing she wants is? Any idea what the first thing? Not red wine, actually.
Cheese.
She's not a big drinker. Cheese. It's not cheese, but it could be. Yeah, she wants a bunch of charcuterie, which is you know, like dried cured meats and things, like, you know, different kinds of ham and cheese. She's so French. She's like, that's the first thing she wants. She wants, like, you know, a load of French food that she hasn't been able to eat. Since she got pregnant.
She's been pregnant.
Yeah. So that's the thing. She just wants to eat some really nice French food.
Okay. Yeah. Next question. This is a good one as well. Which one of these should you use to clean your baby's umbilical cord? Because this is something I didn't realize, but when the baby is born, they cut the umbilical cord, but they leave about 4 centimeters,
three, four centimeters,
like and they have a little peg attached,
like a clip to their belly, like a clothes peg almost.
Really?
And that's how. And they go home like that, yeah.
And what happens if you let the peg go? Does the everything just come out and that's it, like a balloon? Yeah.
Don't let the peg go.
Don't let the peg go, no, of course.
And then after a few days, it will fall off naturally. So which of these should you use to clean it?
So the umbilical cord, not the peg.
The umbilical cord.
Okay.
So rubbing alcohol, antiseptic, plain water, or baby shampoo?
Oh, baby shampoo. It wouldn't be baby shampoo because that's for hair, isn't it? Antiseptic alcohol. That's gonna be painful, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the alcohol antiseptic. That's what I'd put on myself if my umbilical cord was out.
Yeah.
That's what I'd use. But I think you shouldn't do that on a baby. It would be too painful.
And what would the Native Americans do?
I have no idea on that one. I don't know. They'd probably use buffalo turds or something. I don't know. But I think I'm going to say the shampoo. I think that it's probably no, it's totally the wrong answer. I don't know. I was going to say shampoo because I thought the alcohol would be too painful. But I guess you've got to make sure it doesn't get infected, right?
No, it's just plain water.
It's just water.
It's just water.
Right.
Oh, he's not doing very well, is he? Oh, here we go. Here's a good one. What is the average amount of time it takes for a baby to learn how to sleep through the night? Is it 3 months? Sorry, 3 weeks, 3 months, 12 months, or 2 years?
It's got to be 2 years.
I mean, just based on
what I've heard from other parents, you know, the amount of complaining that I've heard from other parents about how, oh, you're never going to sleep, all that kind of thing, it's got to be the longest option, which in this case is 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, my son's almost three and he only really got it about 6 months ago. So he was, he's not great. Okay, last question. What is the recommended position for sleeping babies? On her tummy, on her side, on her back, or in her car seat? Or hanging from a tree?
It's got to be, I don't think, on her tummy is not a recommended position, I think. On her side? No. Surely not. I don't think babies can sleep, can lie on their side. I think it's on their back. On her back. Yeah?
Yeah.
But one thing I've heard is that you've got to make sure the head is not always in the same position because then they end up with a flat head.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
Like sometimes you put the baby down one way and then you put it down the other way so that it's not always turning its head to the same direction.
Yeah.
You know, so to make sure the head gets fully rounded.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Right, do you want to know what your score was?
Okay.
You got two right.
I got two right? Oh, God.
So the first one was, how long should you let your newborn cry? It's less than 1 minute, because when newborns cry, I can read you the advice, but it just says, tune in and respond immediately. Because they only cry for two reasons. They only really cry for one reason when they're small, and that's because they're hungry.
Oh, okay. All right, so that's when they're newborn, but like later on, you can leave them a bit longer. Is that right?
Yeah.
I think that's up to, it's definitely down to the parent, I think.
So the Native Americans are totally wrong about this one.
Well, I think so.
Okay.
It's not our position to say. I don't want to upset your Native American listeners. listening from the reservation to Luke's English podcast.
All my Native American friends.
All them. How many times a day does a newborn need to feed it? Is 8 to 15 times. It varies. Some babies will feed more often than that, some less, but it's usually between 8 and 15. Right. Yeah, you got the present one right, the voucher for the facial and so on.
Yeah.
Well done.
All right.
We talked about the umbilical cord, and it's plain water, not shampoo. What was the other one? Oh, we got this. We all got this one wrong. Apparently, it says the average amount of time it takes for a baby to learn to sleep through the night, it says 3 months. It's bullshit.
Yeah, rubbish.
Absolute bollocks.
Absolutely rubbish.
Bollocks.
Okay. Well, look, we could keep talking about this for ages, but we don't have that much time. But, I mean, how about now? Tell me some positive things, please. I want you to really sell the whole experience to me now, because I need to, because I'm fed up with like people telling me how difficult it's going to be and how traumatic it is and how you never sleep and all that stuff. But you've got to sell it to me now. Why the hell am I doing this, guys?
We don't have to. It's too late. we can just tell you how terrible it's going to be. Nothing you can do about it.
I need you to put a positive spin on it for me, because otherwise I'm just going to, you know, like I'm having dinner with my wife later, right? Yep. And what I don't want to do is sit down with her and go, oh God, this is going to be so difficult. You know, I don't want to do that. Instead, I want to when we're having dinner, I want to be able to like be all positive and wonderful about the whole thing. So please sell the idea to me if you would.
When a baby is born, the mother and the father are both flooded with a particular hormone.
Mm.
And it's like the love hormone, the happiness hormone. And it is it's an incredible, incredible feeling. It's difficult to describe and it's difficult to conceive of ever loving anybody as much as you will love your kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the most powerful thing.
Definitely. But that's actually something you should be aware of, because suddenly probably your wife is your number one person and she's going to be relegated. And so will you, actually, in her mind. And that's something you should be aware of. The kids will take priority.
Ben and I are both, we're what, third or fourth now on the list?
Yeah.
Of our wives' priorities, you know.
Third or fourth?
Well, it's the kids, then it's her, then it's us.
Then it's us. Yeah.
But that's fine. And your relationship...
You've got to just be prepared for that and build on it, really.
Yeah. Okay.
There's just so much that is amazing about it, because when they're little, you just stare at them in wonder, and you know I think I must have counted my son's fingers and toes about six times, just because I couldn't believe that he was so perfect. There was nothing wrong with him, you know. And then as they grow, you know, they begin to, you know, their facial features begin to develop more, because I think all new babies just look like ugly little
things. Not very attractive,
not really attractive.
Newborn.
Then after 2 or 3 weeks they begin to sort of resemble you, if you like, and they begin to develop more features, and then a few weeks they begin to then recognize you and they begin to smile, and then they start gurgling and making noises. Like when I get home now, my eldest always comes running in and is like, daddy, daddy, and gives me a big hug. And the youngest, the 4-month-old, he just like looks at me and his whole face lights up with this big smile. And it's just the most amazing experience, you know? And everyone I know who's got kids who are older, they just tell me it just gets better and better and better. I mean, until they become teenagers and then,
it's just game over.
Yeah. But it's wonderful. You just, in a way, Luke, and I'm genuine here, I'm quite envious that you're about to go through this for the first time, because it is just an astonishing thing to go through. Yeah. It really is amazing.
And just watching them develop when their character starts to come out is just incredible. Yeah.
Their sense of humour.
They start talking to you, conversing with you, and just watching how they act and behave and just run around. It's incredible.
All right. Okay, that's more like it.
Yeah. But you're going to be tired forever, dude.
I'm tired already.
there's tiredness, and then there's
this.
There's kids' tiredness.
It is insane.
And it's relentless.
How do you manage that? I mean, you know, you've both got sort of important jobs at the school. How do you deal with being tired like that then? Where do you get the energy?
I don't know how I've still got my job, to be honest.
It's like, you know, you go onto sort of an autopilot, sort of, you know, reserve battery sort of state. And you just function through it. It's weird.
It's like your phone has a low power mode. I pretty much am on low power mode all the time. You know, I go to work and I do my job, but I don't move around very much.
Yeah.
You know, but you adapt. You know, you evolve, I think.
Yeah.
Because having a second was much easier than the first in terms of sleep, because I wasn't sleeping anyway. So, you know, I remember it being quite a shock to the system how little sleep you get at first.
Yeah. This is why Andy and I always go to conferences, you see, because we get a couple of nice good rest.
Yeah.
go to any concert, a conference anywhere outside London, so we can stay in a hotel.
But then even that's tricky, because you have a couple of good nights of sleep and you're... body's like, oh, I remember this, I want more of it. So you end up still being knackered.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. When's the next conference? Is there a TESOL France conference coming?
There is, but I'm not going to that one. Actually, one of the teachers here, he's going to do a talk for one of his publishers. So
is that Ed?
TESOL France.
Just Ed. Yeah, Ed Pegg. He wrote an ESP series called In Company, and he's going to sort of talk about his book. So,
did Ed Pegg write In Company, the new version?
Not the original In Company, but there's a new series that have come out now. I think he wrote a third edition for, I think it was pre-intermediate, but they've started doing sort of more specific books now. So there's one on like investment, one on supply chain management, etc., and he's contributed heavily to those. So
okay, cool. All right then guys, well, I'm glad that you gave me that test, even though I only got two questions right, because now I feel like I know a little bit more than I did before, and I from that test. But also thanks for kind of telling me a few things about what it was like for you.
Maybe what we should do, Luke, is once the baby's arrived, you know, once things have settled down, we should have another chat, and you know, we could see how much of our advice helped you. And
I don't think our advice. I don't think that's good.
See how tired you are, and you know, we'll see you with the big bags under your eyes. And
I tell you one thing, Luke, which I remember very, very clearly when my first son was maybe 3 or 4 days old, and that is that even though nothing can prepare you for what's about to happen, you kind of instinctively know what to do. Like, I remember he was crying, and I picked him up and I started rocking him, and I kind of instinctively knew how to stop him from crying, and it worked. So I think you just
rely on your instincts. Yeah. You know, you're a clever guy. You pick it up. It's,
well, just use the force.
Use the force, exactly. It's all about the force at the end of the day.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Luke.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. And I guess I'll let you get back to your Friday afternoons now.
Yeah.
There are no classes at this moment.
No classes at this moment. So it's me scrambling around getting everything ready for next week now. So
I'm going to go home now, because it's almost 5 o'clock and I want to be out early today.
Okay. Right. Well, I'll let you go then. Okay, really great to talk to you. Thanks so much for kind of explaining your experiences and things. We all appreciate it very, very much.
And we'll speak soon. And good luck with everything. And send our love to your wife. So it's a really loud motorbike just passing us.
Yeah, we all heard that. That was a motorbike. And we'll,
like a chopper or something. You know?
Yeah, like some sort of Hell's Angel or something going past. And there was also a police car earlier on that sounded exactly like a UFO. Not that I know what UFOs sound like. I mean, we don't know. But anyway, it didn't sound like a police car. It sounded like some sort of spaceship flying past. But that's London. Yeah. They've got very advanced police over there these days.
Yeah.
Haven't they? All right. I will say...
Send our love to your wife as well. And we wish her all the best.
I will do. And the same to both of your wives as well. And, you know, just to have a nice weekend with the family.
Yeah.
Cool.
Nice
one. All right.
Thanks,
Luke. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. So there you are. That was my conversation with Ben and Andy. Did you catch everything? Did you manage to understand every single thing that was said in the conversation? There may have been some things that you missed. Well, you know what's happening now, don't you? Of course you do. That's right. It's vocab time. Let me now go through some of the vocab that you heard in that conversation. This is a chance for you to learn some more English. And don't forget that the list of phrases and bits of vocab that I'm going through here is available for you on the page for this episode on my website. Not bad at all. Quite helpful, I think you'll agree. Now, have you actually visited the website to look at word lists? It could be the difference between you remembering the word and you not remembering it. For example, me just saying the word a couple of times in this episode is good, and explaining it and giving you examples, that's good. But it's also worth actually seeing the words so that you know how they're spelt and so that you know what they look like, because a word exists in many forms in our heads. You know, it's we know a word in a number of ways. We know how it works with other words in a sentence. We know how it's spelt. We know what it looks like. We know what it feels like to write that word by hand. We know what it feels like to write the word on a typewriter. We also know how it feels to say the word, so the sort of physical side of the word. We also know what the word sounds like when someone else is saying it. Also, we just know, for example, other little details, like, for example, collocations with prepositions and so on. So it's all part of the process of learning and using words. It's not just hearing me explain them and stuff, but also seeing them written down and then recording them and trying to revise and remember them and then using them yourself. So there's a whole sort of life cycle of a word. I guess you go from noticing it to learning it, to using it, you know? So looking at word lists, I mean, word lists that I'm explaining in episodes can be a really good way for you to kind of build your vocab. So let's go through this list then. I've got a number of items in the list. Most of these things are about having babies, but there are some expressions that relate to other things, sort of bits of general English as well. So Ben started by saying, she told me that she thought her water had broken. So at the end of a pregnancy, at the beginning of the labor is when is another word for childbirth, the process of childbirth, that's labor. When a woman goes into labor or when she's about to go into labor, this thing happens which is called the water breaking. So her water broke, or her water breaks. She thought her water had broken. This is basically when, like, the amniotic fluid suddenly gets released. There are membranes that hold this amniotic fluid in place, and they rupture, and the amniotic fluid comes out. And it's quite a dramatic moment, because often there's quite a lot of water that comes out, and it's the big moment that means that, you know, shit's about to get real, basically. So if your water breaks, if you're a woman, it means that, you know, lots of water comes out, and it means game on. It's about to begin. So that's what that means. We say in English, your water breaks, or her water had broken. And Ben was talking about that particular day when his partner's water broke. He said, I was training someone to fill my role while I was taking paternity leave. So his role there is his job at the school. He was training someone to fill his role, meaning to do cover work for him while he was away taking paternity leave. So leave is the word we use to describe time off work. There are different types of leave, L-E-A-V-E, different types of leave. Here it's a noun, an uncountable noun. You've got sick leave, that's where you take time off work because you're sick. Holiday leave, when you take time off because you're on holiday. And also we have paternity leave for a man. Paternity leave is when you take time off work because you've had a baby. For a woman, it's longer, and that's maternity leave, M-A-T-E-R-N-I-T-Y, maternity leave for a woman and paternity leave for the father. Next thing is the contractions were pretty slow, actually. So we've talked about the water breaking. When a woman goes into labor, there are contractions. So this is when the uterus, the muscles around the uterus contract, which kind of basically push the baby out. So it's the process of pushing the baby out of the uterus, and it's done with contractions. And you get contractions that start fairly early, and they can be quite slow. And as you get closer towards the birth, the contractions get more frequent, until, you know, it's a certain number every few minutes, which means that you're in the drop zone. So contractions, that's when the uterus sort of gets tighter in order to try and push out the baby. And I think it can be painful. There are different types of contractions. We actually, during pregnancy, the mother-to-be will experience a number of different types of contractions. For example, in the third trimester, the uterus can get a bit tighter. It can feel like the baby bump gets tighter moments. And this is essentially the uterus sort of practicing, doing a few little practice contractions. And these are called Braxton Hicks contractions, which are kind of like fake contractions, not real ones. So Braxton Hicks is the expression we use to describe that phenomenon of sort of fake contractions. So it took her ages to start contracting properly. And then the next thing is we went to the hospital after 36 hours of labor. So labor is basically the process of childbirth, and it can take a long time, as you can hear there. You know, the water can break, you know, and even 36 hours after the water breaks, you don't get a baby yet. So there can be 36 hours of contractions and so on. The next thing is she was already 9 centimeters dilated. So to dilate, let's see. The term dilate means essentially kind of get wider. Now, your eyes can dilate. That's where, for example, if it's very dark in the room, your pupils, the black parts of your eyes, will get wider to allow more light in. So that's when your pupils dilate. But also, in this case, for a woman, when she's having a baby, her cervix can dilate. So the cervix is, you know, this is where the baby passes through. And the cervix can be sort of dilated or not. What's the opposite of dilated? I suppose the opposite is constricted. But anyway, we don't say that very much. But anyway, so the process of the cervix opening to allow the baby through, this is called dilation. And at the beginning of labor, there is a certain amount of dilation, a few centimeters. But it's not until probably about 10 centimeters of dilation that the baby is actually ready to pop out, as it were. So 9 centimeters of dilation is quite advanced in terms of the labor. But, you know, a woman's cervix will dilate by a few centimeters, and slowly during the period of labor, the dilation will become wider and wider until about 10 centimeters. And that's when it's time for the baby to come out. I think Ben or Andy said, my wife was out of it. So if you're out of it, it means you're probably not completely conscious. Let's say if you've taken drugs or something, you might be on another planet. You might be completely wasted. You could say that you're out of it. So in the case of childbirth, obviously it's when the woman has been given the epidural, which has it's like a nerve blocker, and so it can make the woman feel a bit spaced out. She might be completely out of it. Also, if you drink or if you take drugs, you might feel out of it. So, you know, if you drank, he drank all that whiskey and he was completely out of it. Or, you know, he smoked a spliff or something and he was out of it. So to be out of it means to be kind of what's the word for it? Kind of like under the influence of a drug. I think it was Ben who said, they just whisked my wife away to the theater. They whisked her away. That's a nice expression. Whisked, W-H-I-S-K-E-D. Now, we do use whisk when we're making food, like if you're battering eggs or if you're making crepes, as you heard me talk to Paul about. You would need a whisk, which is a little implement that allows you to whip things like eggs or to whisk things. Now, that's a whisk. We also have the expression to be whisked away or to whisk someone away. And that means when you remove someone really quickly. So they took her away really fast. So you can imagine her on her bed with wheels on it. And as soon as the labor began, or as soon as the baby started coming out, they whisked her away. Actually, I think in this story, I think it was Ben's wife. It suddenly became a bit critical during the birth. It must have been very scary, because I think that suddenly something went wrong. And all these doctors arrived in the room, and they whisked her away, meaning they, you know, took her away to some special room very quickly. Andy, I think, said, I'm not a man for a crisis. I wouldn't know what to do. I'd be running around like a headless chicken. Here's a nice phrase, to be running around like a headless chicken. I think it's fairly clear, isn't it, what that one means? You may even have a similar expression in your language. But apparently, I've never done it, but apparently if you chop off the head of a chicken, its body continues to run around headless, just crazily running around, you know, because it's got no head, but the body continues running, which is amazing. So running around like a headless chicken, you can imagine it's sort of someone running around in a panicked state, not knowing where they're going or what they're doing. So that's Andy in a crisis. He'd be running around like a headless chicken. Okay. Let's see. I think this is Andy who said this. He said, my wife developed gestational diabetes, which sounds very serious, but apparently it's actually quite common. Gestational diabetes. So gestation is the process of actually making the baby in the uterus. It's called gestation. And gestational diabetes is a condition in which pregnant women sometimes can get a form of diabetes. What is diabetes? Diabetes is basically your body's way of dealing with sugar. So if your body struggles to deal with sugar or struggles to break it down, then it might be that you've got diabetes. And gestational diabetes is something that happens during, as I said, during pregnancy, and that can cause high blood sugar, and that can affect the pregnancy and the health of the baby. So gestational diabetes is an issue that actually a lot of women experience. And too much sugar going through the placenta can make the baby grow too quickly. So the placenta is an incredible organ. It develops with the baby, and it's essentially the sort of the go-between between the baby and the mother. So everything goes into the placenta, and it's like an organ which feeds all the necessary nutrition to the baby's blood supply. So the baby's blood supply goes through the placenta, and the mother's blood supply also goes through the placenta. And in there, nutrients and other things like oxygen are transferred from one blood supply to the other. And yet the blood supplies never actually mix. So it's incredible. So the placenta is a very important organ. And if the mother has diabetes during pregnancy, then it can cause too much sugar to go through the placenta, which can have like negative effects on the baby, for example, making the baby to grow too quickly. So I can't remember who that was, but anyway, you could listen back to it and listen out for these words, and you'll understand them more. In fact, in these episodes where I go through vocab lists afterwards, it's always a good idea to go back and listen to the conversation again, because you'll be surprised, honestly, you'd be very surprised how much more you notice, how much more you remember, and how much more you understand. It really can make a big difference. Listen to the conversation, listen to me explain the vocab, listen to the conversation again. And in fact, I know I upload a lot of episodes, but if you have time, listening to episodes several times can really make a huge difference to you remembering that stuff and it staying in your head and you actually using it. So it can help you learn. Number 14 in my list here, the umbilical cord had got wrapped around his neck. So the umbilical cord is what attaches the child to the placenta. So it comes from the belly button, the tummy button, and there's this cord that comes out. And after the child is born, the umbilical cord gets cut. But the umbilical cord can be a problem during childbirth, because if it gets into the wrong position, it can become wrapped around the child's neck, which is very dangerous. To become wrapped, W-R-A-P-P-E-D, wrapped around something. Okay, you can imagine, let's say, you know, if you pick up a snake, strange example maybe, but it might wrap itself around your arm as you hold on to it. Well, similarly, the umbilical cord can be wrapped around the child's neck, which is a dangerous situation. So number 15, they cut the umbilical cord and took him over to the resuscitation table. Resuscitation is the word I'm looking for here. To resuscitate someone is to bring someone back to life. And it would probably involve blowing air into the lungs of the person or the child, or maybe even pumping the chest to get the heart going. This is called resuscitation. So the resuscitation table is a table where the newborn baby can be resuscitated. Must be a scary moment, that. Andy said that he went to the table to see his son. And first of all, I saw this massive junk. So junk, what's that? Well, you know, junk means sort of like rubbish or stuff that you don't use anymore, you know, stuff that needs to be thrown away. That's junk. But also in American slang, to be honest, a man's junk can mean his genitals, like the whole lot, like the balls and the penis, the whole thing is the genitals. And a slang word to refer to all of it can be junk. So the first thing that Andy saw when he saw his son was this massive junk, meaning his son's private parts, as it were. This is because when babies are born, their genitals are swollen. So the first thing Andy saw was that he recognized that it was a boy because of this junk. Yeah. And I think Andy said, "That was me finished. I just burst out crying." So to burst out crying is a nice phrase that means to suddenly start crying. Burst, like if you burst a balloon, in this case, to burst out crying. Okay, so to suddenly start crying. And then, apparently, after this emotional moment, Andy's son immediately weed all over the nurse. He weed all over the nurse. Weed, W-E-E-D, but it's the past form of wee. So he urinated all over the nurse, the baby, not Andy. I don't know what Andy did, but I think he managed to keep himself under control. But apparently the baby weed all over the nurse, and then Andy felt proud, like, that's my boy. I think Ben said, "I held it together." If you hold it together, it means you don't lose control and you don't get too emotional. So, you know, during the drama of this difficult birth, he managed to hold it together. He held it together. He said, "I don't know how I did because I'm quite squeamish." If you're squeamish, it means you're sensitive about, you know, things like blood or slightly, you know, disgusting things like that. Certainly blood. If you're squeamish, it means you can't stand the sight of blood or organs and operations and things like that. So Ben said, "I held it together. I don't know how I did because I'm quite squeamish." But then he said, "As soon as I got outside, that's when I really broke down." To break down, that's when you become too emotional. The emotions get the better of you and you probably start crying. You might even physically break down as well, which would mean you'd have to sit down. You know, your legs you can't stand on your legs anymore. But it probably means emotionally to break down, meaning to kind of get very emotional and start crying, probably. They tried to make me feel better. They tried to calm me down a little bit by saying, "If there are dramas, don't worry, you're in safe hands." So referring to the fact that in the hospital, there'll be lots of, you know, nurses and doctors and people, qualified people around. So we're in safe hands. So if you are in safe hands, it means the people around you are going to look after you. Okay, you're in safe hands. Don't worry. You're in safe hands. Okay. Like, I don't know, an example. Imagine a student has come to the London School of English and on their first day, they say to, you know, someone on reception, they say to Lee on reception, "Oh, you know, I'm a bit concerned." And Lee says, "Don't worry, this is the London School of English. We do this professionally. Don't worry, you're in safe hands. We'll help you learn English," for example. Next one is number 22. And it's this bit of advice. You just have to go with the flow and it's all right in the end. To go with the flow. It's a nice phrase. Do you know that one? You probably do, actually. It's the sort of phrase that you would know. If you go with the flow, it means you just sort of allow yourself to keep up with what's going on and that you don't resist things. You just stay relaxed and calm and take things as they come and just react to things as they come and just go with it. Just allow yourself to go along with things and the way things are going, rather than resisting them or questioning them or trying to stop things. You just have to let yourself be carried along by events. So just go with the flow. It's like, just relax, calm down, be cool, just go with the flow. Number 23, I think Andy said this, or Ben, I think actually it was Ben, after the first 2 weeks of the baby being born, he thought it was pretty easy because the baby was just sleeping all the time. It wasn't until about 3 weeks later that the baby started to wake up and then started crying all the time and wouldn't sleep. But in the first 2 weeks, it seemed pretty easy. And Ben said, "This is easy. I've nailed this parenting lark. I've nailed it." If you nail something, it means you do it really well. Okay? So, well done, mate. You absolutely nailed that presentation, meaning you did a really good job on the presentation. You nailed it means you did it really well. It's a nice expression. It's a really common expression, actually. There's a video, a viral video going around of some guy on a bus. It looks like an English guy on a bus, and he's doing different accents, different regional accents, and he's very good. And the I think the title of the video is "This Guy Nails Every Accent." So, you know, to nail an accent, meaning to get it exactly right. So Ben thought, "I've nailed this parenting lark." So he thought that he was really good at being a parent because he thought it was easy at the beginning. "I've nailed this parenting lark." So a lark, L-A-R-K, a lark, it's an interesting word. I think it's a particularly British word. A lark is like an activity, basically. Like this parenting, this parenting lark, meaning this activity of being a parent. Interesting. I think it's an activity that's usually done for fun or just something that you're doing. It's a bit like a laugh. Okay, to do something for a laugh, but a lark. Yeah, okay. So an activity, let's say, probably an activity for fun, but you can use it to refer to like a thing that you're doing. So this teaching lark, you know, "I've nailed it, this teaching lark," or I don't know, whatever else it could be. Like this learning English lark is it's quite fun, isn't it, really? Okay, so "I've nailed it, this parenting lark." That's what Ben thought. He was wrong, of course, because it was just the beginning. And then I said, "Once they start to wake up, that's when it kicks in, is it?" So meaning that when the child, after a couple of weeks of, you know, not really being aware of what's going on, when the child actually starts to wake up and become a bit more conscious, that's when it kicks in. And when I said it, I mean the sort of the challenge of the parenting. It's that's when it kicks in. If something kicks in, it means it really begins. It starts to take effect. So in this case, the challenge of parenting really kicks in after a couple of weeks. I'm just trying to think of any other examples of kicks in. Like, you know, if you're talking about a roller coaster, you can say the ride doesn't really kick in until until the second half of the ride. That's when it really kicks in. That's when it starts to get really exciting. The film, you know, you could say the tension really kicks in the second half of the film. Okay, so in this case, it's the challenge of parenting kicks in once they start to wake up. I think Andy said, "If you can manage the people who want to see the baby, the people who hound you." So apparently when the baby's just been born, it's quite normal for lots of people to want to come and see the baby. And it's like members of family or friends, and they hound you to see the baby. Hound, which is another word for a dog, H-O-U-N-D. If someone hounds you, it means they keep asking you, they keep pestering you, they keep chasing you up again and again and again. If it's family members, it's probably because they want to see the baby. But you've just had the baby, so the last thing you want to do is to have members of your family round, because the place is probably a bit of a mess and you're just trying to recover from having the baby in the first place and you're getting used to having, you know, a new person around. So the last thing you want really is people coming around and sort of, you know, you have to make them cups of tea and stuff. Although I'm sure it's lovely, you know, to introduce your new baby to the family, but you know what I mean. It seems that a lot of people are very keen to see the new baby, and so they will ask and ask and ask and ask, and they will hound you to see the child. So that's the expression, to hound someone. It's like to constantly keep asking all the time. Andy then asked me questions from his quiz. He found a quiz about being a dad. And he said, to introduce the quiz, he said, "I tell you what, I've got a little quiz here." So there's that phrase again, "I tell you what," which is a really nice phrase that I'm sure I've mentioned before. It's worth learning. I tell you what, which is like, I've got something to tell you, essentially. Let me tell you something, or I tell you what. And you can use I tell you what to make a suggestion or introduce something new to the conversation. I tell you what, I've got a little quiz here. Okay. And at one point I said, she's just gone through childbirth, so she needs to be pampered. To be pampered. P-A-M-P-E-R-E-D. To pamper someone is basically to give someone like really good treatment, to be really nice to them, to give them lots of nice things, to make them food, to make them cups of tea, to give them gifts, maybe to give them stuff like massages and stuff, and to just be really, really good, to pamper someone. Like if it's your birthday, you know, you'd expect to be a little bit pampered, wouldn't you? People bring you gifts, they make you food. And if you're lucky, you might be given a gift like a day in a spa. If you went to a spa where they have massages and special types of, you know, skin treatments and aromatherapy and stuff, if you go to a spa, you expect to be pampered, don't you? Similarly, if it's your birthday or something, you'd like to be pampered. Well, I imagine if a woman's just gone through childbirth, she deserves to be pampered a little bit. We were talking about cleaning the belly button because, you know, when a child is newborn, they've got a kind of fairly raw belly button because the umbilical cord has been cut. And so they've got like a section of umbilical cord, which is still attached to the belly button. And eventually it just kind of falls off as the skin dies. It just falls away, but it can be a bit sort of sore. So it has to be cleaned. And they were asking me how I should clean it. And I said, what would the Native Americans do? They'd probably use buffalo turds. So a buffalo turd is a turd is a poo, isn't it? So jokingly, I said that they'd probably use buffalo turds to clean the belly button. Hilarious. Number 29, and I think we've got about five things left. When the baby is born, the mother and father are flooded with a hormone, the happiness hormone. I don't know if that's the official name of the hormone, the happiness hormone, but I think I've heard that when the mother and father, have the baby right at the beginning, there are lots of hormones that come out. In fact, both parents are flooded with a hormone. I guess you understand what that means, right? If you're flooded with something, it means suddenly there's lots of the hormone. You can be flooded with lots of things. Obviously, you can be flooded with water, but you can be flooded with gifts. You can be flooded with praise. You can be flooded with a hormone, meaning that suddenly you have lots of this hormone going around in your body. Your wife is your number one person, but she's going to be relegated, and so are you. Here's another football phrase. To be relegated is when a football team gets dropped down to the league below. So you've got the top of the league, you know, if you win or if you're in the top three, you might be promoted to the next league above. But similarly, at the bottom, if you fail and you're at the bottom of the league table and you keep losing, you will be relegated. So that's a footballing expression. But here, in terms of the relationship, apparently, at the moment, my wife is my number one person. But apparently, she's going to be relegated because when the baby arrives, then the baby will become number one. So both my wife and me will both be relegated, apparently, to becoming the number two most important person. So apparently we should start getting ready for that. Okay, that sounds fun. Gurgling noises. Gurgling. They start gurgling and making noises. This is babies. Apparently they start gurgling before they start speaking. They gurgle. So to gurgle is to kind of make non-specific noises, you know, like the way a baby kind of those sorts of noises. We can call it gurgling. Also, gurgling might not even be as clear as da 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 ma ma ma, things like that. Gurgling might even be just, you know, just noises like that is gurgling. Yep. Okay, number 32. Andy was saying one of the joys of being a father is seeing the reactions from his kids. And he said, when he comes home, his youngest son, he looks at me and his whole face lights up. If your whole face lights up, I think it's clear, isn't it? It means suddenly your whole face gets filled with joy and happiness. So you can imagine a big smile arriving on his face. Bing! And his whole face lights up. A bit like a pinball machine, you know, pa-ching, like that. His whole face lights up with a big smile when he sees Andy come home from work. On the subject of sleep, they were both saying that you don't get much sleep, and then if you, for some reason, you go on a business trip or something, you get a good couple of nights sleep in a hotel, and your body remembers and goes, oh, I want more of this, and you end up still being knackered. So knackered is the word I'm looking at here. Knackered, K-N-A-C-K-E-R-E-D, British slang, meaning exhausted. But it's very, very common. So, you know, you get a good couple of nights sleep in a hotel and your body remembers and goes, oh, I want more of this. And you still end up being knackered, meaning you end up being exhausted, even if you do get more sleep, because your body just tells you that it wants more of that. And then here's the last thing in my list. Once things have settled down, we can have another chat and we can see you with the big bags under your eyes. So to settle down means to become, I guess, a bit more normal again. You know, when you just have a baby, things might be a bit crazy. You might not be sleeping. Your normal routine gets totally changed. But then things settle down, meaning they become more regular, more stable. Everything kind of becomes a bit more normal again. So once things have settled down, we can have another chat and then we can see you with the big bags under your eyes. So if you have bags under your eyes, it means you're very tired because you get like, you know, you can actually see it. You get like grey or dark sort of your skin underneath your eyes changes and it gets a bit puffy and a bit swelled up. And we call these bags. To have bags under your eyes or to have rings under your eyes. I wonder how you say that in your language. Do you say to have bags under your eyes as well? I wonder. Well, folks, that's the end of the vocab list. Again, you can see that on the page for this episode on the website. And I'd love to know what you think generally of these last two episodes of the podcast. You know, what do you think? Do we do things differently in the UK and in France to how you do them in your country? Are you shocked by anything that you heard in this episode? I mean, are there any shocking differences in the way that children are born, where you come from? What do you think of all of that? And where do you stand on things like breastfeeding in public and epidurals and natural births and things? I'd love to know all your opinions on this stuff because I know that this is the sort of thing that actually people can be very opinionated about. So, you know, feel free to jump into the comments section and let us know. Now, while I'm recording this, my wife still has a few weeks to go in terms of the pregnancy. We've got a few weeks left, but I'm a little bit, I don't know if I'm behind myself or ahead of myself, but I'm recording this now. It won't be published until probably a few weeks' time. So who knows, by the time this has gone on online, there's a chance that the baby may even have arrived. I don't know yet. We'll have to wait and see. And we'll have to wait and see how it affects things like the output of episodes of this podcast. But I think it's, like I've said before, I think it's probably going to, it's certain to affect output a little bit at the beginning. And there might be a little period where the number of episodes that get published kind of drops a little bit. But I mean, you've got enough episodes now in the archive and I've uploaded so much recently. I'm sure that you've got enough to keep you busy until I can start publishing again more regularly. But I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be the episode, like the last episode before the baby arrives, or if I'll have a chance to upload another one before this. I've got lots of episodes in the pipeline, including lots of conversations that I've already recorded. So I recorded one with my dad recently. I recorded several conversations with Amber and Paul, and more stuff that's in the pipeline. So I don't know. If the arrival of the baby disrupts things, I don't think it's going to be that disruptive ultimately to the podcast because I've got lots of content which I can publish in the meantime. Okay. All right then. So wish me luck, please, wish me luck. And why don't you write your advice in the comment section on the website as well? Because I'm sure that many of you out there have had children. So if you want to share your experiences or give me any advice, I mean, I'm sure that for some of you, there were some things that you didn't know before you had a baby that you wish you had known about, the sort of thing that could really prepare you, that you really should have known, that someone should have told you. Well, that's what I want to know. Please do share all of your insights, all of your tips and, you know, advice. I really want to know all of it. So I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks again for listening to this episode. I'll speak to you on the podcast soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.